Chapter 6. Osiris Base. Callie woke up early. 4 weeks, and she hadn't gotten used to the moon's slightly off hours yet. She rolled over in bed and checked her tablet. Another 3 hours until her shift started, and they headed out. She stretched under the covers, then stood up. The air was a bit chilly, and she still wasn't used to the idea of sleeping in pajamas. She rubbed her bare arms and went digging for clean underwear. Her room at Osiris was as large as her university room, and she'd shared that with a roommate. It had the bed, a desk, 2 sets of shelves, and a pair of overgrown snake plants in opposite corners. There were 5 rooms open when she and Tessa arrived, and Waqid had told them to pick whichever ones they liked. The extra rooms let people move around at will and took the edge off any mild claustrophobia. She stood tall and stretched up, reaching for the ceiling, bent over and pressed her palms flat against the floor, counting to 20. She reached back, grabbed her ankle and pulled it up until the bottom of her foot almost touched her shoulder blade, then the other leg. She didn't have a bar in the room, but she brought each leg forward, one at a time, raising it until she could hug it to her chest. Then she stretched her legs out to the side, taking turns setting them on the desk and leaning into them for a 30 count. She pulled on a tank and shrugged a fresh jumpsuit up around her shoulders. Ismay had found her 2 that fit much better, but there'd still be chafing in Callie's future for another week or so. A woman back at Luna City did alterations, and by the end of next week, she'd finally have a half dozen comfortable uniforms. Until then, she tried to leave her jumpsuits unzipped and as loose as possible. She headed for the dining room with her boots in her hand. The cold in the floor seeped up through her socks. Tall bamboo palms stood between each door in the hallway. One of the orientation classes, Sociology and the Moon, if she remembered right, had talked about the amount of psychological planning that went into the residences. A faint, rhythmic clink reached her ears. Jake in the gym. He didn't seem to do anything outside of the job, movies, and working out. He didn't even go with the others for the weekly trips to Luna City. She wondered if he'd been some kind of athlete back on Earth. He did love his old baseball cap. At the end of the hall, another door opened and Tessa stepped out. Her hair made a wavy halo around her head. She closed the door behind her and saw Callie. They stared at each other for a moment.
"I did not expect this," said Callie.
Tessa's mouth twitched as her expression bounced between surprise and confusion.
"I don't know what you're talking about. Isn't that Mikhail's room? So?"
Callie let the silence expand to fill the hall.
"I needed to fix my glasses,"
Tessa explained, holding up the pince-nez.
"That's all. I just returned some tools he loaned me. At 4:30 in the morning. Yes. Without your pants. What I wear or don't wear on my own time is my business," said Tessa, tugging her tank top down over her thighs. "And if I had been doing what you're insinuating, we're on the moon. There's nothing inappropriate about it. It's actually very healthy, psychologically speaking."
Callie pressed her lips together and tried to look serious.
"So, does Mikhail have a good set of tools?"
Tessa crossed her arms, clearly attempting to look professional under her morning hair.
"Now you're being childish. I'm sure Kurt would have been proud to be remembered this way, knowing you'd taken his teachings to heart." "Oh, now that's just uncalled for in so many ways."
But she gave Callie a quick, tight smile before she marched down the hall and turned the corner toward her own room. Callie wandered the rest of the way to the dining room and saw shifting lights from the next door down. She walked past the archway and peeked into the base office. Waqid sat at his desk, scratching the back of his head in thought. The screen in front of him displayed a satellite shot of the moon's surface. A dark gray haze covered a large section of the image, blurring the landscape. As she watched, a new frame jumped up, showing a variation of the same image. The boots in her hand bumped the door frame, and Waqid threw a half glance over his shoulder, not even making eye contact.
"I just need to figure out what we're going to do," he said. "We'll cuddle before the day starts, I promise."
"I'm flattered," said Callie, "but I don't think I'd be up for it with Izmi right next door."
He swung around and looked at her.
"Sorry." He smiled and rubbed some sleep from his eyes. "She's come to check on me twice."
Callie pointed at the screen.
"What is that, a cloud?"
He looked back at the image and nodded.
"It's a dust storm, a big one."
"I thought lunar dust storms were little fluke things that only happened at sunrise and sunset."
"Yeah, so did everyone else. Surprise."
"How big?"
Waqid tapped a few buttons and a grid appeared over the image.
"About a kilometer across here at the head, but it's stretched out over almost 70K back."
"The head?"
He nodded again.
"It was heading south-southeast. The official theory is it may have started up with all the dust kicked up by the meteor strike."
She studied his weary face.
"What's the real problem?"
"It stopped," he said. "It just came to a halt last night, around 10:30. A lot of the dust has already settled. It was twice as big when I finally got satellite images."
Callie looked at the image again. She could see something through the blurry dust right where the storm had come to rest. The shape was the size of a small coin at this scale.
"That's a base, isn't it?"
"Yep," he said. "Haran."
His fingers did a quick dance and a series of thin white lines highlighted the base on the screen. It sat at the center of the storm front. The path of the storm traced a straight line across the moon's surface back to Hades' base, also outlined and labeled by the computer.
"Have they said what's going on?"
"They're not saying anything. They've gone silent."
"What?"
Waqid stared at the screen.
"Last message I got from Tony was yesterday afternoon, telling me their buggy was about 20K from Hades. When I didn't hear from him for a while, I figured he was putting together some kind of official statement or report. That's the kind of guy he is. And I'm sure he's as nervous about this whole Hausmann thing as everyone else."
"Understandable."
"Yeah. When it had been a few hours, I tried calling. Tried a few times on different channels. Nothing. I called for comms, satellite checks, and they're all fine. Even had them double-checked. Aron's gone silent, just like Hades."
"What about using satellites to look? There are 3 or 4 observation satellites, right?"
"There are, but they're slow, and there's a line. It took me 3 hours to get general satellite coverage."
"2 stations going dead isn't a high priority?"
The corner of his mouth flinched into a weak smirk.
"Believe it or not, we don't rate very high up on the ladder. We bury dead people. It's an important service, but at the end of the day, we're just talking about 2 caretaker bases not immediately answering their comms. Tourist requests get higher priority than us."
"What about Kurt?" she said. "A houseman. Wouldn't they bump you up if you said this involved him?"
"Oh, yeah," said Waqid. "Of course, that means officially, publicly admitting something might have happened to him. I don't want to make that call any more than anyone else does unless I've got a pile of facts and pictures and signed statements backing me up."
Callie couldn't think of anything to say to that, so she just nodded.
"So," Waqid said, "do you have any clever ideas about what we should do?"
She tried to figure out if he was joking or not.
2 bases go silent in 2 days," she said, "and one of them sends out a weird vid. And a missing, possibly dead, Discorp heir. We should probably go check it out."
"Yeah, that's what I thought, too. I kept hoping I was overreacting."
He tapped in a command, and a droning alarm echoed through the halls.
I'm taking a team of four out to Aron in an hour. You're awake and up to speed, so welcome to the team.
Anubis pulled away from the docking hall. Jake drove with Wagid in the seat next to him. Callie sat on one of the buggy's rear couches. A bulky emergency kit bulged out from beneath each couch, held in place with a strap. Mikhail's oversized body leaned back on the other couch with his eyes closed. Sleepy, or maybe avoiding her gaze? Who knew how much sleep he'd gotten last night? She watched one of the spider plants swing back and forth while the vibration of the wheels worked its way up through the couch. Jake had Anubis moving at top speed, somewhere around 40 kilometers an hour.
"There's no faster way to get there?" she asked.
"We could take the trike,"
Mikhail replied from the other couch. His eyes didn't open.
"Twice as fast, but not much room to take anything or bring anyone back."
"Yeah, but this is slow," Callie said. "There must be something faster at Luna City."
"Yep," said Wagid. "A low orbital hopper. I just need to spend a day or two convincing Gordon we really need it. You'd think the damned thing ran off his grandchildren's blood or something."
Mikhail smirked, still without opening his eyes.
"Would you want to tell Discorp you burned up 1,500 kilos of fuel to learn Relay Tower was out?"
"Beats telling them the CEO's son is dead because we didn't," said Callie.
"Damned if we do," Jake called back. "Damned if we don't."
"Exactly," said Wagid. "It's all about finding the least degree of damnation."
He twisted back to look at Mikhail.
"You really think it's a Relay Tower?"
"I don't think, boss,"
said the ox with a shake of his head.
"That's what I have you for."
"Thanks."
Mikhail settled back a little more onto his couch. Callie stood up and grabbed at one of the railings. She took a few shuffling steps up to the cockpit. Wagid glanced up at her as she balanced between the two seats.
"Are you sure there's nothing I can do?"
He shook his head.
"It's a 4.5-hour drive to Aron. 9 all the way to Hades. Relax, read a book, water the plants, get some sleep."
Callie made her way back to her couch. She threw herself down on the pads.
"Damn slow for a rescue mission."
"That's why he's been so reluctant to go,"
Mikhail said. He cracked an eyelid and cast a sympathetic glance up at their boss. The burly man dropped his voice another few decibels.
"No matter what, this is not rescue mission, and he knows it."
She glanced at Wagid's arm sticking out past his seat.
"What do you mean?"
"All the bases, our equipment."
He gestured around the cabin.
"There are so many safeties and redundancies. Problems are either so minor they're not worth mentioning, or they're very, very serious."
Callie looked at him for another moment and then understood.
"Very serious," she said. "Meaning no survivors."
"And no rush."
An hour out, just as they were passing the edge of the Osiris Cemetery, Izmi's voice crackled over the comm.
"You out there, Anubis?" Wagid tapped the console. "Anubis here. What's up, hon?"
"Weird stuff. We finally got an LPS signal off someone from Aron."
"Who and where?"
"Arturo Mendez. Heading your way fast, probably on a trike, but he's not answering any channels."
Jake furrowed his brow.
"Who's he?"
An image of a young Latino popped up on one of the screens.
"New guy," said Izmi. "Don't have much on him." "I think I know him," said Callie.
She leaned against the back of Jake's chair, watching the landscape out the windshield.
"He was on the carrier up here with me and Tessa."
"Is his calm down?" asked Wagid.
"Nope,"
said Izmi.
"There's a definite return. He's just not answering. The storm's moving again, too. Also heading your way."
Callie and the others exchanged glances.
"Are you serious?" asked Wagid.
"I wish I wasn't."
"How fast?"
It started off kind of fast, but it's settled down a lot. It's only moving about 3 or 4 kilometers an hour now. I'm sending you the new satellite pics.
Callie studied the new images. It was the same view she'd seen on Wagid's screens earlier. The cloud completely hid Eron now. New vectors illustrated the direction and speed.
If nothing changes, said Izmi, it'll be more than 2 hours before it reaches you.
Oh, joy, murmured Callie.
You should meet up with Mendez in a little less than an hour. We've told him to keep an eye out for you, but, well, he's not saying anything.
Callie heard Izmi exhale over the speakers.
And I'm afraid there's more bad news.
Of course there is, sighed Wagid.
Gordon got smart and called the supply train. They were supposed to finish at Eron yesterday morning and be on the way to Hades.
Supposed to? Echoed Jake.
The train stopped answering yesterday afternoon,
Izmi said.
No one thought to check on it until now.
Wagid closed his eyes for a moment.
So is Gordon sending the hopper?
He was going to until I told him you were already heading out that way. Now he's waiting to hear your report.
Lazy motherfucker, muttered Mikhail from behind them. That's Sheriff Lazy Motherfucker, Wagid called over his shoulder. Show some respect.
The buggy's front wheel worked its way over a large rock, then the second wheel, then the third. Callie studied the pictures as the cabin swayed like a ship at sea.
Okay, keep me posted, hon, said Wagid. Anubis out.
You guys be careful out there, Izmi said. Osiris out.
Callie cleared her throat.
So, just to be clear, there's a big, weird dust cloud. We've lost contact with everyone who goes into it. Somebody's running away from it, and we're driving toward it.
That about sums it up, yeah, said Wagid.
Yeah, Jake said. Sometimes this job just sucks.